Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's see what we've got on the docket today. First, do you know who's having a really bad day? Well, R. Kelly is. Next, the cops screwed up on this one. They're going to need to get the checkbook ready. No good deed goes unpunished. That's all I can say about this case. And then let's see how this turns out in West Hollywood. No words for this story, except what were you thinking? And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. You know the drill. Subscribe if you have not. Like the video if you do. Leave me a comment below. Hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. And as always, you can listen to us anytime by downloading us on your favorite podcasting app. We're there. Scott Reich, Crime Talk, Crime Talk with Scott Reich. Whatever you type in, it will show up. All right, let's go ahead and open the docket for Wednesday, June 29th, 2022. Who's having a bad day? That's right, R. Kelly. Well, he was sentenced to 30 years in prison, going to federal prison, following his conviction last year of federal racketeering and sex trafficking charges stemming from his efforts over years to use his fame to ensnare victims he sexually abused. Prosecutors had asked the judge to sentence Mr. Kelly, 55, to more than 25 years behind bars, while his defense attorney asked for 10 years or fewer, saying prosecutors' request was tantamount to a life sentence. Well, because it more than likely is. Well, Judge Ann Donnelly said that she considered Kelly's own traumatic childhood, during which his attorney said he was repeatedly sexually abused by a family member and a landlord. The judge stated, "It may explain, at least in part, what led to your behavior," the judge said. "It most certainly does not excuse that behavior." Defense attorneys and prosecutors had argued Wednesday in court over whether Mr. Kelly could even pay a fine. The defense said he was pretty close to being indigent, which means broke, and he could not pay a fine. Prosecutors disagreed, saying that money from the sale of some of his music rights and millions of dollars in royalties held by Sony could cover any fine. Now, in the 9 months since the conviction, Kelly has replaced his entire legal team with a new set of attorneys, and they were, in fact, the attorneys that helped Mr. Bill Cosby get his sexual assault conviction overturned, and also represent Mr. Cosby in his civil case that he lost this month at trial out in California, where a civil judgment was entered in the amount of $500,000. Well, his attorney stated now that they are prepared for this case, and they're ready to go fight on the appeal. Now, I understand why Mr. Kelly can have a bad day. It's never good when your attorneys ask for a number and the prosecution asks for a number and the judge goes above both of those numbers. In fact, I had that happen last week in a case in a homicide sentencing. We thought we were making a pretty good recommendation to the judge for a specific number, and the judge went up by 7 years. Not a good feeling. Your client kind of looks at you like, well, I thought the other one was supposed to happen. And you say, well, it's ultimately up to him. It was just a recommendation. So Mr. Kelly obviously is probably going to spend the rest of his life in prison, given the fact that he is going to federal prison and he will serve 85% of that sentence. So let's face it. Well, just for easy numbers, he's going to be eligible to be released in about 24 years. He's going to be near 80 years old. It is a life sentence. And that's not to mention all his other legal matters that he's going to go to trial for here shortly in Chicago as well. Those cases will more than likely result in a conviction, and they will more than likely be run consecutive, which means one after another. So when he gets done with the New York sentence, then he would, in theory, start the sentence from Chicago. Tough day for Mr. Kelly. Needs to get comfortable to his new reality. All right, let's take a look at this case. The city better get their checkbook ready. This surveillance footage can be a little disturbing. Surveillance footage captures the moment a handcuffed suspect was paralyzed after being slammed against the door of a police van before being dragged out of the back by cops in Connecticut this past week. Now, Richard Cox is 36, and he was arrested on June 19th for possession of an illegal firearm, and he was transported in a van without seatbelts to the New Haven Police Department when the vehicle came to a sudden stop, tossing Mr. Cox headfirst into the wall. Now, Mr. Cox is now apparently fighting for his life at a local hospital where he's paralyzed from the neck down and has to use a breathing tube. Now, Officer Oscar Diaz apparently pulled the van over to check on Cox after the sudden stop. What happened? Diaz asked as Cox attempted to tell him various times that he was unable to move his body. Diaz called an ambulance and proceeded to drive the police van to the headquarters. Multiple officers responded to the van and insisted Cox get up to leave the van, despite Cox insisting he couldn't move. "If you got to drag me out, do what you got to do," Cox told the police officers as they proceeded to pull him out by the leg. "Sit up," an officer told Cox numerous times as he was placed and slumped over in a wheelchair with his head hanging to the far side of his shoulders. The officers proceeded to take Mr. Cox inside the station for processing without providing him medical attention. Now, before dragging Cox on the floor of a cell and handcuffing his feet together, officers accused him of consuming drugs and alcohol, claiming that that was his issue. "He's perfectly fine," you can hear an officer say. Well, like I said, Cox is currently at a hospital in New Haven, and he's paralyzed from the chest down and is using a breathing tube. Needless to say, his quality of life is probably forever diminished, which more than likely means somebody in New Haven, Connecticut Police Department, well, the taxpayers are probably going to write a big old check on that one. Why couldn't they have not buckled him in? Really? Yeah, not good. All right, well, here's a tragic example of no good deed goes unpunished. The mother of a good Samaritan who was fatally shot by police after he took down an active shooter has sued the officer responsible and the city's police chief, alleging that the officer should have known that the good Samaritan was not the active shooter. Now, Johnny Hurley, using his concealed carry pistol, shot an active shooter named Ronald Troika on June 21st of 2021 after Troika opened fire in a Colorado shopping and entertainment district and killed police officer Gordon Beasley. Now, according to the lawsuit and Colorado authorities, Mr. Hurley then picked up Troika's rifle to remove the magazine. But when an Arvada police officer saw Hurley holding the rifle, the officer fatally shot Hurley from behind without any warning or knowing that he was in fact not the active shooter. He was the Good Samaritan good guy that took out the active shooter. Well, the wrongful death lawsuit filed in the Colorado courts this week by Mr. Hurley's mother, Kathleen Boland, alleged that the officers responsible, Craig Bronlow, should have known that Hurley was not an active shooter because Hurley and Troika were wearing different clothing and looked markedly different. Now, when the incident began that day, Bronlow and several other officers heard gunshots, saw Troika from a window of a police administrative office, and saw that he was a heavy-set man carrying a long gun and wearing a black shirt and a hat, according to the lawsuit. Unlike Mr. Hurley, the three Arvada Police Department officers did not spring into action, the lawsuit alleged. Rather, they cowered inside, choosing self-preservation over defense of the civilian population. The Arvada Police Department did not immediately respond to requests for comments on the lawsuit. Now, Boylan's attorney also did not respond to requests for comment either. Now, Colorado prosecutors previously investigated the incident and declared that they would not criminally charge the officer, Officer Brownlow, over the shooting. And in a letter last year, the district attorney, Alexis King, said that Brownlow's decision to shoot Hurley was legally justified, despite his heroic actions that day. Now, prosecutors said that Brownlow was aware that the active shooter was wearing black. He reasonably perceived that Hurley, who was dressed in red and posed a threat and could have been a second active shooter. At the moment, from the information available to Officer Brownlow, John Hurley was armed with a powerful rifle and a handgun in a populated area amidst an active shooter. That's what the DA said. Now, based upon the information known to Brownlow, the presence of a mass shooter and the potential for a second mass shooter in a red shirt carrying a rifle and a handgun turned toward a hub of community activity, warranted deadly force, and no less degree of force would eliminate that potential threat. But Boylan's lawsuit alleged that no reasonable officer could have perceived a threat for Mr. Hurley's action and that his death was a result of a misfortunate split-second judgment call gone wrong, but the result of the deliberate and unlawful use of force. Tough case. I mean, you've got an active shooter that's taken out by a good guy armed with a gun, and then the police take out the good guy armed with a gun who took out the active shooter without giving him any warning, without being certain that he was the active shooter. Whew, tough call, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if that were you or me, we probably would be charged. Just saying. Let me know what you think in the comments. All right, well, let's see how this story turns out in a couple of months. The West Hollywood City Council has voted to defund their sheriff's department despite crime rocketing 137%. The proposal passed by a narrow 3-2 vote and will see the current force of around 60 sheriff deputies reduced by 4. Now, funds saved by reducing the headcount will be used to pay for unarmed security ambassadors under a scheme called Block by Block. As I noted, the proposal passed 3-2, and Seppi Shine, who proposed the plan, said the sheriffs cost too much and that the Block by Block program represented more bang for the buck. She stated, "What we know now is our residents want foot patrols. We need to be fiscally responsible." And a couple of the residents are a little uneasy about the decision. Several people are saying that the residents and business owners from all over the city have for the last few months expressed their deep concern about cutting the sheriff's budget in the midst of a crime wave and at a time of general unease. Now, in February, the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department reported that crime in West Hollywood had risen 137% compared to the same time last year. February of 2022 saw roughly 250 crimes reported, including murder, rape, burglary, aggravated assault, arson, and human trafficking. So we'll see how that turns out. Now, the two people that voted against it was another city councilman and the mayor, who said it was absolutely the dumbest thing that anybody could possibly do. I guess we'll see who's right. I somehow think the unarmed patrols will have little to no effect on preventing crime whatsoever. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope crime goes down for everybody. But if there's no consequences, you get more of what you tolerate. No words for this one other than what in the heck were you thinking? Authorities say that a 39-year-old teacher in New York is accused of sexually assaulting a 13-year-old student with whom she was tutoring outside of the home. Now, Kristen Bellinger was taken into custody and charged with one count of second-degree rape, a Class D felony. This arrest stems from a lengthy investigation into a complaint that Bellinger engaged in sexual intercourse with a 13-year-old male back in 2019. At the time of the incident, it was alleged that Bellinger was providing private in-home tutoring to the juvenile outside from her then role as a special education teacher with the Hamilton Fulton Montgomery School District. She was released from custody after posting bond of $15,000. I don't even know what to say. A 39-year-old with a special needs student that's 13? What were you thinking? Oh my gosh. I don't know. Maybe you can describe it other than just stupidity, predator. I don't know. All right, let's get to our dumb criminal of the day. Please meet Juan Roman. He's a 46-year-old male, and well, guess what? He was found performing a sexual act on himself inside the aisle of the Dollar Tree. Now, unfortunately for our dumb criminal of the day, Mr. Roman, guess what? The entire incident was captured on surveillance cameras, according to the police affidavit. Apparently, Mr. Roman tried to pull up his pants and leave the store when he was ultimately confronted by law enforcement. Deputies have booked Mr. Roman into the county jail for lewd and lascivious exhibition charges. What is it about people getting upset with food and having to pleasure themselves at the store? I just do not get it. All right. Let's go ahead and close the record for today's docket. We hope you enjoyed the show. We appreciate you watching, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.